Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between. We also want to let you know that you can now join our Patreon program. It starts from £5 a month to £10 or £20, depending on what you want. Each tier allows you slightly different levels of access. Depending on which one you choose, you can enjoy early access to podcast episodes, exclusive member benefits, merchandise, shout-outs, and your chance to feature on one of our shows. Any support you can give us is massively appreciated and will help us grow and continue to bring cool content to race fans all over the world. You can find the link on our socials, just search for Motormouth or go to patreon.com. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and you can also leave us a review. Download the Motormouth app where you can get live race times, exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy.
Welcome to episode 17 of the Motormouth podcast. Alongside me in a different county is the well-groomed, lovable, affable, big friendly giant, Mr. Harry Benjamin. Hello, Harry, how are you?
Hello, your introductions get odder by the day.
It's all factually correct.
Well-groomed today.
Well, you usually are well-groomed and you are a big friendly giant.
Oh, well, thank you very much for that. I'll stick that on the CV. I'm all right. Quarantine is treating me well. I'm back in the cupboard as ever. Yeah. I do my regular Joe Wicks morning workout, followed. And then this afternoon, I think I'll go out for my allocated outside time, which yes. I look forward to immensely. Apart from that, quarantine, going all right so far. How's it in your neck of the woods? How's the whole homeschooling?
It's
How
getting
is the
there.
Homeschooling going?
It's getting there. We're doing all right. I think so far today, Chloe's managed about 20 minutes with Arthur. What time is it now? It's 1 o'clock, so not
what
great.
What subject?
Generic. he doesn't really do. I mean, it's basically, you know, ooze, ease, you know, phonetics and all those.
So you're not qualified for that kind of thing, then, really.
Well, no, I can't read all right, so I'll leave Chloe to it. We're doing all right. We're doing all right. Right, let's get on with the show. So today we are joined by the hardest working man in motorsport, Ollie Webb. He joins us on the line. We're working remotely still as we're all locked down with coronavirus. He's joining us, I expect, from his home in Cheshire after a track day in Silverstone was cancelled due to the dreaded COVID-19. Ollie started racing in karts relatively late, I think, between the ages of 9 or 10 or thereabouts, moving up the ranks in the Manchester motorsport scene and onto bigger things in T-cars, Formula BMW, Formula Renault, Formula 3, Indy Lights, European Le Mans, Dubai 24 Hours and the World Endurance Championship, where he now resides with Bike Collis in LMP1. He's a regular on the famous Goodwood Hill. wheel in BAC's Mono and W Motors machines, and he's a former client of none other than me. Did I ever tell you that, Harry? Did I ever tell you that?
Oh, shocker. Not another driver that
I guided him with his commercial prowess, with mixed success, let's be honest, for a few years, way back when. He's a supercar aficionado and can often be found on YouTube mixing it with the likes of Seen Through Glass and Supercars of London. A former guest on the podcast Seen Through Glass, and we're delighted to finally have Ollie on the show after chasing him around the world for the past 6 months. Ladies and gentlemen, a big Motormouth welcome, Mr. Ollie Webb.
Hey!
Hey!
How you doing? Good to be here. Well, good to be in the same place I've been all week.
Where are you?
Are you at home? How's quarantine treating you?
It's treating me okay. I mean, being in the countryside is paying off, so we've got, of course, the best weather possible when we're not allowed to go out and use it, but... No, we're happy and got the other half back from America, so we've got all the family together. So it's good to be happy and healthy.
Excellent, excellent. What's it like up? You're Cheshire based, aren't you?
Exactly. Yeah.
What's it like up there, Ollie? I mean, it's all the way up in the north. What is electricity? Is that in?
We got it last week.
Oh, fantastic!
The light bulb was invented before that, but we've got. It's 18 degrees outside right now and sunny.
Positively
I'm wearing shorts. It is lovely weather.
Yeah. It is, isn't it?
Yeah. I've just sat outside and had my salad. It was smashing. Sunglasses on. Beautiful. Can't complain.
Oh, exactly. Can't complain. So I'm going to go out and have a bit of a run, I think, in a bit. But no, we're lucky we've got literally miles of empty fields kind of out and around here, so you won't see a soul.
But I suppose you can, even, you know, with coronavirus, you can still take the car out, I presume, and have a bit of a thrash?
Yeah, I was actually researching that this week, like what's advised and what's not. And going on a drive is what in the top six things you're actually allowed to do, even during lockdown. I mean, you can't be more isolated than locked in your car. You're just not allowed to get out. So that's great. I mean, the roads are empty. Go to Wales, maybe have a little drive around and then come back.
Oh, God, yeah. So you're near the Welsh border.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I can get to Anglesey Race Circuit in just over an hour.
Oh, ideal.
Very tempting in these times.
Yeah.
Well, should we dive in? Let's take it all the way back as we continue. So talk us through racing, motorsports. How did it come about? What was the light bulb moment in your head when you were a kid being like, yeah, this is what I want to do?
I think my earliest memory of actually getting involved in motorsport or karting, should we say, at the beginning was just going to a birthday party, like a team sport or one of those Daytona karting style indoor places. It wasn't in the family, as it is with kind of, I'd say 80-90% of drivers. There was no kind of father, godfather or anything like that involved. And I just kind of fell in love with the speed. So I didn't really have any friends or family to turn to that liked it in the same way I did. All very supportive of it, but I was kind of on my own in kind of comparing it to what I liked with friends. And I got addicted to karting. What I thought was early... about 10 or 11 years old. As it turns out, I was probably about 5 years too late in terms of how early people start now. But yeah, that's how I kind of got into it.
Was there any other path that you were looking at apart from racing? Did you think this is it? Once you got into that cart, for the first time, do you think this is where I want to be? I'm happy here. There's nothing else that I've got in my mind I want to do.
Yeah, that was it. It was 100% tunnel vision. And to the point where it wasn't even... okay, what if this doesn't work, or what's my backup option, or what do I do on the side? Absolutely everything from the subjects I chose to study at school to get me through school, every single thing had an angle to help. So when I'm choosing my subjects at school, I'd choose business studies so I could learn how to get sponsors. And then when I would choose the artsy subject we had to choose, I'd choose photography so that I can get my sponsorship brochures right. And then everything was just as a means to an end.
And you take that business side of racing quite seriously, don't you? I mean, the whole sponsorship element, which is obviously vital for all drivers, is an area that you get very involved with. Do you think it's an art that perhaps more drivers should take more focus in and try and you know, develop their own presentations in a nice way, get nice photography done, focus on their social media and so on?
Yeah, I think it's a nice balance. I mean, I think right now we're kind of in a decent stage where people are aware of it and they concentrate on their socials well. I've been guilty of focusing on it too much. There's a right balance, and having the right team around you obviously helps. But there was just always that lingering thought of, it doesn't matter how good you are, if you don't have that opportunity there or you're not prepared and ready, then it's not going to happen. So yeah, you've got to be all rounded in that for sure.
That's what, something that's really struck me is in my research for this, of course, I saw a very old clip of you, and I think it was Jack Harvey on BBC F1 being interviewed by Jake Humphries and DC. And the way, and you were talking about being sponsored by Team UK, I think it was at the time. Yeah. And just the way, you know, you, I don't know how old you were there, but you seemed very young, but just the way you came across, and you seemed very ahead of the curve of your time. You think drivers, you know, you look at Lando Norris, for instance, you know, he seems very on it, and he's quite a young guy, but you were there way before that.
Yeah, I think I was quite into that side of it quite early. And that is thanks to, you know, BRDC Superstars, MSA Elite, Team UK, that team, but also the BMW scholarship that I got when I was, I think, 13, 14, before I finally ended up in the Formula BMW Championship. And all of those roles had media training in them, which at 14 you would never normally get. And I got lucky that those schemes all kind of came around just as I was coming through, and because I was into it anyway and I knew I needed it, it was just the perfect fit. So I loved those kind of opportunities, and I knew that I was live on, you know, at that point, BBC F1, when there was no Sky Sports, there was nothing else. And I knew that was kind of my opportunity. That was my kind of Oprah Winfrey interview moment.
No, Eddie came across very, Eddie Jordan was very impressed from what I've seen. So going up through your career though, if you take a quick look back, you know, we said some of the stuff that some of your key highlights so far. Do you have a proud moment that sticks out for you that you always come back to?
There's two which stand out clearly above the rest. I can't separate them quite as much from each other, but I think one of them was 2010. We'd just come back from, it was in the Formula 3 Championship, and it was quite close between me, James Calado, Felipe Nasr, Jean-Éric Vergne, and a couple of others. And I just lost out twice at my home track that Vergne had never been to. And he won both races, and I came second in both. And he'd never been to the track, so it was quite tough on me.
Yeah.
And then I went to Magny-Cours, which was his home track, and I'd never been to it. And I won both races and came second in the reverse grid race and took the lead in the championship. And that was one of my favourite moments, you know, coming back from utter disappointment. And then the other one is, of course, standing on Le Mans podium is one I'll never forget. Frustrating to have done it in my very first year rather than built up to it. But I'm going to have to work back towards that again.
Yeah, you set the bar high. Was Formula One ever the dream, you know, when you started out, or as you were progressing through your career, was that your focus, or did you think from early on, you know, financially or, you know, whatever reason, that's not where I'm going to go?
It was 100% the dream. And it was the only path I was looking at. Again, maybe a bit too tunnel visioned for a while, probably all the way up until kind of 2012-ish era. And we had a few reserve driver kind of contracts fall on the table. And then when we kind of started realizing that, it might just be possible if we get enough sponsorship to get in here to do it. But I think one of the best things that ever happened was ending up in endurance racing in 14. And although it was a very tough pill to swallow, the start of 14, half of my mind was like, oh, if you do this, this is the end of Formula One, you're going into endurance. And then the other half realized how enjoyable it was and also how long a career you can have in something like motorsport when you're in endurance racing.
Yeah, absolutely. But you've driven some F1 cars, haven't you? I think I'd read somewhere that you've driven Kimi's 2011 F1 car and a 2013 Sauber. What are they like to drive? Is it a sort of completely out of body, otherworldly experience? How does it compare to some of the LMP cars that you've driven?
I mean, obviously the most exciting answer would be, it's so different to everything else. But other than the braking, which I think still nothing can come close to what a Formula One car can do on the brakes, aero-wise, acceleration-wise, et cetera, LMP1 cars feel virtually identical with just a bit more weight involved. So although it was really fun to have driven a few of those Formula One cars and some older ones as well, actually Kimi's car was the exact chassis when in the race when he said, leave me alone, I know what I'm doing.
Brilliant.
And actually, I fit in his seat, so I didn't need to get a second molded seat. So I used that seat all day that day, which was great fun.
So you have the same bottom shape as Kimi Raikkonen.
Exactly. Yeah. Ideal. We have the same bums. Yeah. Same
top
squats.
Top of the CV, that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the downforce on the braking because of how light the car is second to none, and that feeling is incredible. Now, and obviously that engine car was a nice screaming engine, so that was great as well. But then the LMP1 cars, such as the 919 Hybrid, or even the privateer cars like the Rebellions now, for instance, they're quicker mid-corner than the Toyotas and the 919s ever were. So it's unbelievable. Yet we have more surface area, so we literally create more downforce than a Formula One car.
You've also raced over in the States in your sort of junior career, Indy Lights, which is the series, sort of the junior category for IndyCar, I suppose, for anyone who doesn't know. What's the racing like over there? Is it a completely different way of life and a way of living?
It is, yeah, very much so. And I really, really fell in love with America that year when I moved over there. I was living in Indianapolis at first, which wasn't the most exciting place in the world, but it was where I needed to be for motorsport, living and breathing it, going to the factory every single day and then gym and simulator every single day. And it was just a real, real fun way of doing motorsport. And I did the last three races at the end of 2010, I think it was, or 11, just to test my feet in it, and got two or three podiums. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'm going to easily win this. So I was like, I'm going to sign up and do that. First couple of races were great. I think we had a pole and a podium, and then I went on an oval. And
No.
I'm not great at this.
No, forget it. It's madness. I know that you and I both know Max Chilton very well, and he's stopped doing them now, hasn't he? He's like, no, enough's enough. I mean, it is terrifying. I mean, traveling at what, 230 miles an hour plus, with a dozen cars around you, it must fill you with complete horror.
It does. I mean, when I was by myself and I did my first oval in Fontana in LA, I really, really enjoyed it. And I was like, wow, you've got to be so accurate. I've got a newfound respect. And I do. So ever since doing ovals, I'm obsessed now with watching the Indy 500, whereas before I'd have it on in the background. Everything from the weight jacket to the tiny millimeters of toe you adjust and trimming off the wing, it is super, super exciting when you're alone.
Yeah.
But side by side, it's just, and it doesn't help that my first oval was Vegas, and obviously Dan Weldon passed away during that, so that was pretty tough. And then the next oval I did, I broke my foot, so I was like, okay, this isn't really, I'm not enjoying it as much. I'm fighting for my life to finish sixth, so it's like, is it worth it? And that's that. I finished the year, but I didn't think I'd ever go back to ovals. I mean, I say that, but you know, someone called me up and offered me an Indy 500 seat.
Yeah,
I might take it back.
What's it like? What's the feeling like when you're in mid pack? 200 miles an hour plus in an oval, what sort of movement is there in this through the steering wheel, and what are you experiencing? Can you sort of articulate that for us?
It's so minimal, everything you need to do, and also quite ridiculous that the differences in the way you drive compared to everything you've been trained in your life before. I'll give you one example. For instance, when the gear ratios are trimmed so closely together at the top, that if you're in second place, for instance, and you're in a toe, you'll be in fifth gear. And as you pull out of that toe to hit the physical wind hitting the car, you stay full throttle and go down a gear.
Right.
Which everything in your head thinks, I'm about to blow this engine up. But obviously they're so close together in RPM that you're using that extra bit of friction from the wind to push through it with the engine.
Yeah.
So everything's so finely tuned and you know, you cannot, I mean, you can't cough or blink or anything because you're just going to steer completely the wrong way.
Yeah. And the safety's not quite there yet, is it? I mean, I don't know what it's like, you know, in very recent history, but when you look back at some of the accidents that have been over the past few years and you see people flying into the fence and hitting a metal pole, you know, it doesn't seem like they've got the adequate safety measures in place to warrant that kind of racing.
Yeah. So the issue they've got is, and I think that it is getting much, much better, but the issue they've got is they've got the most dangerous style of motorsport possible with tracks that are behind the safety of Formula One, which are a lot, lot safer to drive in anyway. So the Formula One cars are going like 100 mile an hour slower with 10 times the runoff and then a safer barrier and then a catch fencing. Mm. So it's so different, the safety versus the speed. So it does need to improve. And, you know, like a hockey-style stadium of see-through glass all the way around would be the ideal, but I know that would cost a fortune in maintenance, so it's not going to happen anytime soon.
Well, you now race with the privateer team in LMP1 by Collis in the World Endurance Championship, which, of course, for anyone who is a novice, is the big one, is the 24-hour Le Mans. Can you talk us through, firstly, you know, what that's like and how that experience came about, but also just the differences in tiers, because in the World Endurance Championship, because obviously you've got the hybrids and the privateers and then LMP2 and all that. So if, could you just sort of talk us through that?
Yeah, so my first year in endurance was in LMP2. It's very clear. So you kind of have LMP1, which is like your Formula 1 cars, but racing in the same race with Formula 2, for instance, which is the LMP2. And then you have the two tiers of GT, which are GT Pro, which have only professionals in the car, and Pro-Am, which often gets mistaken for two pros and an Am, when actually that Am is the equivalent of someone who's, I don't know, an extremely good driver, like a Chris Harris or above, for instance. So it's not an Am. So those four categories all race in the same race together, and the shortest race we do is 4 hours, and the longest is the Le Mans 24-hour, which is 24 hours. And obviously, the higher in the ranking up towards LMP1 you go, the more downforce, better brakes, better fuel consumption, more expensive the car is, and the quicker it is.
So, by Collis, talk us through your experience in LMP1 privateer so far.
So it was pretty tough at the beginning. I mean, it's been tough all the way through, but in terms of the beginning, that we had ups and downs, and at least the ups were kind of rewarded because the classes were separated a lot more clear. So within that LMP1 class, you had the privateer teams, which are effectively, you know, anyone who's spending, you know, 30 million or less effectively and isn't a solid manufacturer. And then the factory teams such as Porsche, Toyota, and Audi, who will be spending 300 to 400 million euros a year. So more of an F1 style budget. So because of that, we had separate podiums. We didn't have hybrid. We have a lot less power and we're a good 5 seconds or more a lap slower. And that's how it was the first couple of years, which was great because every now and then if our car actually got to the finish, old school style endurance racing, then that was a prize in itself and we'd end up on the privateer podium because there was about four privateers at that point and that was great. Unfortunately, the last 12 months worth of privateer racing with Audi and Porsche being gone the last couple of years, they put us all into the same podium because for the championship it doesn't look good if only one privateer's on the podium and one Toyota's on the other podium. The downside of that is we're about 250 to 300 million short a year from a team budget.
Yeah.
without a nice battery pack on the front wheels. So it's understandably, for anyone who knows the sport, it just ends up that, and I do the same, you just end up watching the GT battle because the LMP1 battle is so damn boring and I'm racing in it. So it's such a shame to say that, but it's the way it's become.
What's the motivation for someone like Colin and, you know, by Collis, what's their motivation for competing in LMP1?
Colin's been obsessed with doing it himself. And we need people like that in the sport for so long. I mean, he's been the team boss behind teams like HRT and Super Aguri and these Formula One teams of the past and many more, and I'm sure I'm forgetting a few. And he's been the man behind those teams before, and he's just wanted to be able to do it himself without a manufacturer attached. And we've sat down with him countless times and said, look, you can spend 10% of the amount if you want on LMP2 and we'll do so well. And he's like, I'm not interested. I want my name on the car. I want to do it myself. And I admire that, as frustrating as it does get. I do admire that because the kind of 5% of the time when we have got a good result, it's been a real, real kind of family. It's the equivalent of Williams getting a podium when we get our, you know, two or three podiums we've had. And that's really nice. That's not to say I wouldn't turn around and take up a Toyota LMP1 seat in a second, because I would. but it's just what we're fighting for at the minute, in the same way that George Russell abides by his rules and obligations in Williams, but he would take up that Mercedes seat any second.
Yeah, absolutely. And have you driven a Formula E car?
I have, yeah. And it was much more fun than I thought it'd be.
Really? Because me and Harry have this debate a lot. Like, I'm still yet to be convinced on Formula E. I get that, I can't remember who said it, that that someone told us that it's one of those, I think it might have been Sam, Seen Through Glass Sam, said it's one of those motorsports that you need to go and watch live to really appreciate because it doesn't come across that well on TV. So I'm sort of yet to be convinced and I miss the whole noise of an engine and all that sort of stuff. What's your take on it as a series?
Oh, you know, I'm not convinced with what Sam says. I'm actually even more the opposite.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like they do so. They've done so well with absolutely everything around that sport to cover up for the fact that Formula E is unbelievably boring. They've done so well to make it.
That's going to be our line for this podcast. Yeah,
but that's how it was. And do you know what? For over the years, Alejandro and Lucas Degrassi and everyone involved has done such an incredible job. I now find it exciting in person, but I would not try and convince someone by taking them there live because you don't have all of the gimmicks that you do on the TV to make it exciting and to make it this Mario Kart style excitement. But like, jokes aside slightly for a minute, actually driving the car, the new generation car on a tight twisty circuit that's dirty does feel very, very, very quick. And you couldn't really go that much quicker in a Formula One car anyway because they're so tight, the circuits. Mm. Yes, if you stick it round Barcelona, it will be like a Formula BMW.
Yeah.
But on a street track with those kind of drivers involved with the new car, it now has a lot of credibility.
Yeah. Yeah. What's that? What's the new one that they've brought out? The big 4x4 looks like an SUV. Alejandro
goes now.
Extreme E.
Extreme E.
Oh yeah.
That thing, I've seen a few YouTube clips of it. It's bonkers. It's absolutely rapid.
Yeah, it is. My friends that I raced against in Rallycross this year, the Hansen brothers, they went to test it a few months ago and they said to me, although it's got a long way to go in terms of range, as with all of the electric cars when they first start, the actual power delivery is unbelievable because the thing we struggle with in the Rallycross cars is that turbo delivery has to be instant. So you have a huge anti-lag on there, but then you generate a lot of understeer. Whereas with the electric car, it's just instant all the time. So they said it's unbelievable.
Would you take a seat in Formula E if it came about?
100%.
Yeah.
Mainly because, obviously, like I said, it is fun on a tight track, but it's the names you're up against. If it was a load of dead names, then it probably wouldn't be worth it. But you can go and, you know, it's probably the second best or maybe best and most competitive championship probably in the world in terms of the names on the grid. It's more competitive than Formula One.
And at least you see different race winners and different teams coming to the fore. It's not always, you know, what you'd expect. Which is quite nice to see. Nice little segue, you know, on the reverse side, with Formula One, you usually get what you expect to see, which is Mercedes with all their money and Ferrari and Red Bull up the top. What's your view on the current state of Formula One? And are you looking forward to the changes that they're planning to make to the cars in 2022 season now, is it? I'm trying to keep up.
Yeah, now, yeah.
So what's your take on F1 at the moment?
I love it. I think the last two, maybe three, but definitely 2 years has been great. And I think if Formula One was the only motorsport out there, then I would probably be a bit more frustrated and want some more changes. But everyone says, oh, there's so many championships out there now. And that's great. I mean, you've got IndyCar for what you want with a fixed championship. You've got Formula 2 for the up-and-comers. You've got Formula E for people who are outside of endurance or didn't get into Formula 1 or on the side of their WEC campaign. And you've got Le Mans for all the other stuff. And I admire Formula 1 for its engineering as much as I do its driving. Yeah. So as frustrating as it can be to see the same person win all the time, it's really also exciting to see the innovations in the teams. And now in the last 2 years, with the mid-pack being so exciting, I don't think I would change that much about it. I mean, do I want to suddenly see Norris win 4 races in a row? Yeah, it'd be super exciting. Of course it would. But then not if it's fudged in a fake way. Not if they suddenly get given a huge break.
And then that, using that same sort of terminology in the WEC, obviously there's quite a few changes coming up for that at the moment, particularly with how the LMP1 and the hybrid teams are going to work. What are your feelings towards that over the next few years?
I think the engineering side, it's a little bit of a shame because it will be slower, 100%. So from a pure, you know, wanting to make the quickest possible thing on four wheels, that is a bit of a shame. But overall, if I were to run the championship and I was head of the ACO, I would do the same thing because we need that old GT1 era. And the only way to get that back is by making these hypercars. And how exciting would it be if Joe Bloggs, or a very successful Joe Bloggs, has a Valhalla or whatever, a P1 GTR or a Senna GTR in his driveway, and he gets to see something that at least looks like that on the grid winning at Le Mans? Because now this, I mean, a Toyota winning at Le Mans, let's face it, I mean, a Toyota Yaris doesn't become a Toyota LMP1 car. It's two completely different things. So it's really exciting if we do get this grid full of Valkyries and Senna GTRs. I'm not sure who's going to eventually sign up to it, but at the end of the day, seeing those win will sell cars, will generate more money, will make the championship last longer, and will make people fall in love with endurance again.
Also, I love the name hypercar. Just makes it sound even cooler.
Sounds like it should be hovering or something.
That's the next level.
Ollie, you've driven a very eclectic bunch of cars, both on and off the track. I know that you're very into your supercars, classic, modern classics, and all the rest of it. I'm sure it's a question you've been asked a number of times, but one daily driver, one classic. Could be a modern classic, could be something older, and one race car for the rest of your life. What would you have?
These cars are just too good these days. That's the issue. Back in the day, cars were so average that you'd just have to pick the one that outstand. There was nothing near a McLaren F1 in its day, would it? So the easy answer back then was a McLaren F1 because nothing was near it. Now I would, as a daily driver, maybe an 918 Spider with a trailer on the back for the luggage or something. And
then I can so see Ollie traveling around Europe in one of those with his luggage in the back, his dog.
Classic. I would probably, even though there's just 99.9% of its DNA is utter crap, I would probably still have a GT500, like an Eleanor Mustang from Bullet and Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Just to drool over. Yeah. And then race car. I'd probably have the 919 hybrid, the no rules WEC car. Because it is just still the quickest thing on the planet for sure. I mean, if they just carried on running that project, it'd be quicker than a Formula One car for sure.
Wow. And what about in the world of esports? Are you big into that? It's really coming up as well this year. It seems we've got no actual live race action. So can we see, have you got a little rig set up at home, or are you into your F1 gaming?
Yeah, it's all kind of happening quite quickly. So I was, I've not been into it for a while. So back in 2010, I did a lot of sim driving at Red Bull, me and Vern at the Red Bull F1 sim stuff. And I was just on the phone to him before we started speaking, actually. And I'm going to be doing the next Not GP.
Oh, awesome.
As they're called.
Oh, brilliant.
So I've got the rig all set up. It's kind of a rush because everyone's getting their rigs. So I'm announcing soon a partnership with a brand doing some stuff with Michelin on esports gaming. So it's all kind of come at once. So all the rigs here, games are all here. I'm trying to install and learn how to be on iRacing and Steam again. And I was racing Matty from WTF1 last night around Monza, and I definitely got it wrong because my throttle was my steering and my steering was my throttle. So I had to use that for the race. So my setup definitely needs some work, and I definitely came last there. So he was laughing at me all night. But yes, is the answer. Esports is going to be me for the next month.
We're loving it. We're loving it. Harry, this could be your break into motorsport as well, because there's no height restrictions.
There are no height. I could never be a racer because I'm 6'5" and I've got size 16 feet. So just never, I can't, you know, getting a foot into any cockpit of any car.
No. I mean, I'm size 12 feet, and I even remember.
Oh, wow. That's big.
Yeah. In Formula 3, before it was a hand clutch and the brake was in the middle, the steering column came down over the brake, and I had to shave the bottom of the chassis and shave the bottom of my shoe to be able to get under it. And that's size 12. So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
No chance, mate.
Fucked. Right, esports it is then. I better get my rig. Although I had to play with assists. I'll be dealing with no traction control. But in the world of real racing, of course, there's one incredible result that we picked out. In one of your races in Dubai, is this correct? You were on the grid in 100th position and you finished in second.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. 101st.
100th. Oh, wow. So how did you end up qualifying there? And then how did you carve your way through the field?
That was really interesting. So the year before, we'd won the race outright with the same team, with Mercedes, same teammates, Adam Christodoulou, Abdulaziz Al-Faisal, some really good guys.
And this is this the Dubai 24 Hours?
This is Dubai 24 Hours, yeah. Then the next year, we had the updated car. Same chassis, but all the updates on it. And Patrick Assenheimer went out in practice in the car, and the car got filled with 110 litres of fuel, so full of fuel. But one of the... Anyway, we don't know what the issue is, and I'm probably not allowed to say for Mercedes, but
nearly,
there was an issue.
That was close.
It went into it made it about 100 meters down into turn one, and the car literally exploded.
Oh my god!
Like movie style, you know, gullwing doors kind of flew open.
Didn't you end up in hospital with this?
He had to. Well, not no. I ended up in hospital a couple of years before for a different reason.
Okay,
but he ended up in hospital this time. He had to jump out while the car was on fire and still moving.
Right.
God,
and he suffered some pretty bad burns, actually. So we're very, very happy that he's finally back into racing in the last couple of years. Now that he can get his helmet and everything back on.
Christ.
So yeah, it completely burnt to the ground. And if you haven't seen the pictures, I will send you them after. Mm. But that meant we had no car. We thought, well, that's it. We're out. You know, we can't just, you know, build a new one because it's physically all ash. The whole thing was burnt to a sizzle. And then our teammate from the other car, from the other team, from the sister team, said, oh, well, I, because he's the prince of Saudi Arabia, he said, well, I keep our car from last year in my museum. But literally, Le Mans style, how it had finished, covered in dust, hasn't been touched for a year and a day since we crossed the line in first. And he got it shipped overnight from Saudi Arabia, from his personal museum, to the track. They rebuilt it overnight from scratch, cleaned it all back up. We missed qualifying, missed testing, missed 2 days worth. And yeah, so we had to start 101st and last on the grid.
Wow.
But ended up on the podium. Was the race full of absolute numpties? Or can you claim that you actually just did an incredible job and like Harry says, carved your way through the field?
No, we did very well. I mean, I'd love to say it was full of numpties, but it was a competitive year and it was... full of some really, really good people. And we literally, from that fire, from lap one of the race, and this has never happened in a 24-hour race and will never happen again, we had not a single issue. We were as quick as the front runners, not massively quicker, not massively slower, but we just had no issues. And we kept going and we kept going. And me and Adam did the first couple of stints, and I think we got like 30 or 40 cars each, because obviously it's easier in the beginning than the end. And yeah, we actually led for a couple of hours at some point towards the last few hours. So it's a shame we didn't kind of do the full one extra place.
Yeah, well, that's gutty. But bloody hell, that is from
that's amazing.
A car that is burnt to a crisp. It pays to have a prince in your team, then clearly.
Yeah, that's definitely back in his museum now.
Yeah,
he did the right thing actually. He did the right thing because he was in the sister car and wasn't in our team at that time, and his other car broke down halfway through the race. And because his name was on the side of this car, he just jumped in ours and started doing a few stints and ended up being in the car that was on the podium, which was the older car.
It's actually a ridiculous story, isn't it? Is this documented anywhere?
That's like, the craziest motorsport story I've ever heard.
Yeah. Is there any sort of, not video evidence, not like I don't believe you, but
there is actually a friend of mine, Tim Crawford and Andrew.
Oh yeah, I know Tim. Yeah.
So they both filmed, purely out of coincidence, the only videographer I've had at the Dubai 24 Hours in the kind of 7 years I've done it, and they filmed the whole thing from start to finish. On day one, he was gutted. He was like, well, I've got 10 seconds of footage. The car's burnt. We're not going to race. That's great. Yeah. And he ended up getting the best story ever.
Yeah.
That needs to be repurposed and re-released. It's such a cool story.
Yeah.
So that's a documentary waiting to happen.
It totally is. So we've heard your stories about your favourite car and favourite cars. What's your favourite driving road?
Well, there's so many, but all the ones that people generally talk about with these hairpins are just utter boring.
Yeah,
they look stunning, but they're just not fun to drive.
No.
Route Napoleon I did last year, which was this mountain road on the way, I'm not sure where from, but to Monaco, which I did with a car tour company. And I was the lead driver for this tour. So they have lead drivers. They had Tiff Nadal the year before and Nelson Piquet the year before that. And I was very lucky they invited me to come and be the lead driver. And the point of that is to, you know, drive safely, drive at the speed limit, but also kind of, you know, be the punching bag for anything coming so people behind can judge where you're going. But I got to drive some amazing roads on that. And that was a stunning road. So if anyone wants to Google it, I think it's called Route Napoleon, and it's on the way down to the Monaco Harbour.
Right.
An hour and a half's drive down to, unfortunately, we're going to do it this year, but it's that's not happening anymore, yeah. Is it?
I know.
No, it's a pity. Times. We did, Harry, I might have mentioned that I used to manage Ollie. And,
God, and, honestly, Ollie, every podcast, there's some driver that if throughout the ranks that Max Chilton comes up a lot.
Jamie Chadwick.
Jamie Chadwick. There's always some driver he's got a connection with.
Oh, yeah, Jamie Chadwick. Jamie. I forgot, yeah. Yeah,
used to look after her. Struan. Yeah. But anyway, I digress. But we went out to Razzle Khaimah and did the, what was that road called?
Jebel Jais.
Jebel Jais.
I'm doing a podcast tonight with James talking about that.
Tonight. No way. So that's...
Yeah, going back in time.
So we, Harry, we put this together ages ago, years ago now, with Ollie and JWW from YouTube. And we tore up Jebel Jais. Ollie was in a Ferrari. James was in a McLaren, I think it was. Blue McLaren. Yep. And this road is incredible. They shut the road down, like 36 kilometers. Police shut it down. And Ollie and James just flew up this road. That is a pretty incredible driving
experience. That was one of the best projects ever. That was so good. And that was, that's second, I reckon. That's second to Route Napoleon for sure, because it's just so wide and flat.
Yeah. So you're chatting with James tonight.
Well, sounds like you guys had loads of fun.
Yeah, we did. off your trot. We'll carry on.
Yeah.
So you're chatting to JWW tonight on his podcast.
Yeah, so obviously a lot of his work and a lot of the YouTubers' work is kind of halted now because it all revolves around traveling. So we're kind of doing a look back at different things we did. And I think it's still his highest viewed video ever on his page.
You're welcome, James.
Yeah, exactly. at 3 or 4 million or something. And it was just, they closed the whole road down from the night before at the top and at the bottom. And I still remember one of the scariest things ever was fully drifting sideways through this kind of Pikes Peak style mountain pass. And then a truck with a family kind of sat in the back of this pickup truck was coming down the opposite way because they'd been camping at the top of the mountain hadn't been spotted the whole day. So there was the odd straggler, but that was super, super
and
fun.
We had the the Lycan?
W Motors,
the Lycan, which we took up there, which was an incredibly expensive car and didn't like the hot temperatures and climbing that mountain one little bit. So that was all a bit nerve-wracking, but an incredible experience. Anyway, we digress. I think it's that time, Harry, old boy.
Is it time for the hardest motorsport quiz ever?
I think it might be.
Oh, you didn't play the music last time.
I know.
With that. So this is the Motormouths quiz. I have four clips for you, Ollie, which I'll play to you individually. 1 point for each. And if you can tell me basically what's going on, what happened next, and a bit of rough context as to the situation. If you get any sort of amalgamation of that, I'll give you the point. Half points are awarded as well. Mark Priestley, Blundell, Jenny Gow are top of the leaderboard at the moment, each with 4. Abby Eaton, 3.5. Catherine Pommier is a lowly 3 points in last position. So, very well timed.
But 3 out of 4 is not bad. Now I'm under pressure.
It's not, it doesn't actually, when you look at it, it's not actually that bad. but still, that's a long way down the list. So, where can you come? Shall we have a listen to the first clip?
Right, you ready? Here we go.
What happens here is braking towards 100 meter board.
Oh!
And both.
Both wheels just shatter off the.
That's what you get.
What's going on there?
I thought there was all good. This is obviously way too self-involved. I thought it was all going to be about my racing career.
There will be some, don't you worry.
Oh, God. So this is the Chinese Grand Prix down into the second to last corner in the hairpin. Buemi hits the brakes. Both front suspension uprights fail and one wheel goes over the catch fencing into the crowd and the other one goes into the gravel.
Oliver James Webb.
Very specific, yes.
Check you get a full point you for
that.
Out.
That is one of, it's
that deserves a round of applause.
That is one of, that's an amazing crash, really. To witness that happening is the oddest thing I've seen.
It's a definite big fat
point. Okay, well, that's 1 point in the bag. So, we've got a couple more for you, which are a bit more generic, and then there is a nice self-involved one for you. So let's go to clip number 2.
Here we go.
Lights out, away we go. go, and Pastor Maldonado shooting through. Was that a jump start? And Jenson Button does make a good start. A ball, Hamilton's contact.
What is happening there?
Oh, I don't know. I was I was going to say it was Barcelona, but I don't think it is.
So Maldonado shooting through. Jenson Button's got a good start. This is sort of the era with sort of the year, if that gives you a sort of reminder. And then just at the end, Hamilton contact. And then what happens next?
Hamilton. Oh, okay. Is this Spa into turn one? With Hamilton going over Alonso because Grosjean went down the inside and Maldonado had hit Grosjean. Is that what happened?
That is exactly what happened. So that was the big one in 2012. Huge. Can you tell me all the drivers that were involved in that?
Mean. Hang on. Is this for a bonus point, Harry?
Because this will be, if you do badly in the next two, you can have an extra point if you get all the drivers that were involved.
Okay, so Button, Hamilton, Grosjean, Alonso, Raikkonen. Did Vettel get hit? No, I don't think he did.
There's a bit of a tough one in here.
I feel like there's two more.
Who have you said so far? Wait, hang on. Button.
Button, Hamilton, Grosjean, Alonso.
Yeah.
Wait, I just said another one as well, and I've already lost who that was.
It's a pretty good effort, to be fair.
That's a good effort. There's three, which are tough. They're not front of the field drivers, but they somehow ended up at the front of the field.
Wasn't the Caterham involved at the Caterham? Was that the race where Lotterer came in for one race?
Oh yes, actually, you're right there, but he wasn't involved. I'll give you the last couple. So it was Kobayashi, who was actually second on the grid.
I've given that car that he crashed in that race.
Exactly. Well, there you go. His teammate Perez, and of course Maldonado, who got a clipping just there. So yeah, pretty much half the bloody field. Okay, well, you know what? You're getting a full point for that, by the way.
Yes.
Okay, clip number three, please.
Here we go.
Three Bottas, round turn three we go. And it's Nico Rosberg and Hamilton's onto the grass.
What happened next?
Turn three, Barcelona with Hamilton and Rosberg when they took each other out in a Vettel-Weber style into the gravel. Is that right?
Yes, that absolutely. Is absolutely correct. That is 3 points.
I'm normally so bad at these as well.
You're doing quite well, to be fair. It all rests on this one. You could literally go from bottom of the pile to top if you get this one correct, okay? So, what are you talking about?
The very first time I ever came here was actually to race here. I'd never even visited to watch. I didn't know what to expect, but this place is, like, magical on so many levels.
Oh, that is me talking about Le Mans. I'd never even been to Le Mans as a spectator before until the first time I actually went there to race.
That is a full house. 4 points.
Yes.
Hey. Well, I think we need to change up the quiz because right now it's a four-way tie for top spot.
We need
a bonus question.
I think we should chuck in a bonus question.
I can be in the lead or not?
Can we come up with one?
Okay, question. I've got one.
Go on.
In 2012, because Romain Grosjean was basically binned off from Formula One after that huge crash in Spa for a race, what driver replaced him?
Good question.
This is when he got too many points on his license, was it?
Yeah, so he got too many points, and the crash at Spa kind of sent him over the top, and then he was racing at the time for, of course, Lotus.
Yeah.
And so the driver that subbed in, it was at the Italian Grand Prix.
Oh, no.
This is a high-pressure environment right here. This is for the top of the leaderboard.
I can't believe I've got this out of my brain right now.
That was very impressive. Come on, Ollie.
And this was 2012.
I'll give you a couple of clues. So clue number one, he's still active racing today in a series that we have already mentioned in the podcast.
Yeah.
He has raced in Formula One previously.
Oh, okay. Driver. All right. He's a Formula E driver, I'm thinking. And I'm thinking he's... This might take too long, so I might have to give up. But I'm thinking he's still kind of associated to either Audi or Lotus or something like that.
Do you want the answer?
No, go on. Yeah, I can't get it.
It was Jerome D'Ambrosio. Jerome D'Ambrosio.
No.
Well, unfortunately, I'm afraid I cannot give you the extra point, but you're still tied in the lead.
So that's all right.
Come back and do a final shootout at the end of the year.
So we've now got, a four-way?
So right now, so now it's Ollie, Jenny Gow, Mark Lundell, Mark Priestley.
Well done, Ollie.
But the latest person to get four goes at the top, so.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that is how it works, to be fair. So you are at the top of my, what we could do, hastily scribbled list.
We could do it by time. Whoever did it in the quickest time could go top.
Oh, I was too detailed in my replies. Yeah. I should have just screamed them.
Yeah.
Well, no, I like detail. If you get detail, you're already on to an extra point. But, well, thank you for playing the hardest quiz in motorsport, Motormouths, Ollie.
Well done, Ollie. Terrific effort. Now, let's have a few random ones. Pets. I believe you've got a dog?
I do, yes. Little Stella.
Stella. And is
what
this
kind of dog is it?
She is a Cavapoochon, which is the manliest dog's name ever.
That is quite a camp sounding dog.
A poodle and a bichon that had a nice night out and decided to get a bit freaky.
I bet, bloody hell.
Is this joint custody? Like, do you guys, I don't know whether you live with the missus, but who looks after the dog?
Yeah, we live together. So obviously we both travel a lot, but we tend not to most of the time. When I'm racing, she's here. When she's going to America and doing her work, I'm here. So most of the time we manage to share custody pretty evenly. And if not, our good friends and next door neighbours actually have the exact same breed dog as well. So she goes over there.
Oh, the Cheshire set.
Do you have any passions outside of motorsport?
Oh god, this is the most boring answer probably for most racing drivers. Say the same thing. I mean, passions outside of motorsport. I mean, I've always loved my photography and video editing, and I always studied that at school. So kind of, I love watching those and editing those myself when I go away. Play a bit of guitar. Want to learn how to play the piano. I'm kind of a few songs in, and this is the perfect time to do that.
You've got the time now. Yeah, exactly.
I know, yeah.
another member of the band, Harry.
Yes,
like me and Tim can both sing. So sing.
I'll do all the instruments.
So yeah, multi-talented.
Yeah.
We got 6 months to have along. This is going to go on for. What are you crap at though?
Football. Terrible.
Really.
So bad. Yeah.
How did you discover that?
Probably from all the countless times in the paddock where I have to avoid the reason why I'm not playing keepy-ups with the rest of the drivers.
Yeah. I was terrible. I peaked, my sporting career peaked as the under-12 B-team goalie.
yeah, you should be great in goal.
It's because I was the biggest guy there. That's why they stuck me in goal. Could barely take a goal kick.
You could be a number eight, Harry. You just need to bulk up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, these Joe Wicks things and, my porridge in the morning, it's all coming through.
Ollie, what's the plan for the future? What's the five-year plan? Do you have one, or are you taking it year by year, or just wondering when you're going to get out of the coronavirus?
I think everyone's plans are out the window now, aren't they?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the plan is to win the World Endurance Championship and then repeat four times. But on the side of that, I don't know. I commentate on IndyCar for BT Sport, and I do a little bit of presenting. I get the dream kind of side job or post job at the end of hopefully a long, illustrious career in World Endurance Championship would be to present similar like Martin Brundle does, or maybe Top Gear or something like that. I mean, I'm obviously passionate about cars and motorsport, so to be able to continue down that path or be involved in some way, like a lot of these guys do. I mean, Jensen's now a contributor with Sky Sports, with Anthony Davidson. I think they do a great job of it, and I think that'd be a great thing to do.
Yeah, you must know Chris Harris, don't you, through supercar experiences and so on?
Yeah.
Oh, get in there.
Yeah, you get out, son. Yeah.
Forget Freddie and Paddy. You know, get in there.
Yeah, Freddie and Paddy.
It is hilarious, actually, to be fair. I mean, as far as the other 89 presenters have tried in recent years, I think it's the best current mix, 100%. Anyway.
But, I think they've saved it just about, I think. But, yeah.
I was in America last month, and I was at an audition for a different show. And they were like, oh, do you know what? It's a shame you didn't come in last week, because they were looking for a new presenter with an English accent who's involved in motorsport for Top Gear America. I was like, you are kidding me. Yeah, so I just missed out on that one.
Why would you tell someone that? I did not want to hear that. Oh, yes. Shame you weren't here last year. You would have definitely got it, but oh, well. There's the door. What's my other question? I've lost it now. Any talents that the public doesn't know about?
Guitar, maybe.
Are you on the grades with guitar, or are you just sort of freestyle?
Just a bit of freestyle, really. Yeah, I did it a lot when I was younger, when I was at school. Haven't done it for a while properly, but most of the videos that I post up, other than the super professional tourism board ones, almost all the other ones are edited by me, so I'm really into my editing. That's where it stops, really. That's it.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's funny, not many of the people that we've had on this show have said they've actually got major talents outside of what they're doing. Maybe bar Jenny Gow, who said she was a brilliant cook, but
yes. Oh really,
that was, and I think what did Blundell say, he was car salesman was what he, that's what he car would do salesman. That would be his talent, what he would do if he
selling
wasn't
cars.
Selling secondhand cars. Yeah.
Oh, love it.
All right, I'm gonna put you on the spot here. I want a quick answer to this. Who's your favorite YouTuber?
Oh, different for different situation. Sam makes me laugh every time.
Yeah, I like
Sam makes me laugh every time.
Is that a world that you want to get more involved with? Is the Ollie Webb YouTube channel going to continue to grow?
A few years back, I thought, this kind of daily vlog thing, this would be really fun. And I very, very quickly realized that if I'm going to be anywhere near as good as these guys who are doing it full time, and it is a full time thing.
Do it every day.
Yeah, it would just sacrifice other stuff. And it was a very, very easy answer to me. I said, no. I said, I can spend 20 minutes every night on Instagram, on my phone, before I go to bed, edit a picture or a video, upload it, and it's not affected my day. And then I can wake up and focus on winning a championship again. If I started YouTube, it would affect stuff. So I'm not willing to do that yet. Yeah. So Instagram it is, and that's all I do pretty much.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have a similar kind of thought process with that. Nikki Shields, Harry works with Nikki quite a lot, and her YouTube channel got some decent traction. But again, she's got a young son now. She's traveling around. She can't do it every day. And I think
it's a full-time job. Yeah, totally. Isn't it? It's a full-time job.
Completely.
To have the success that you want, it's a full-time job.
Yeah, and the quality of what some of them are putting out, not all of them, but some of them are, is almost kind of old school kind of Top Gear series style stuff. And if you're going to do that three times a week, you're doing three times as much as a kind of a full BBC show with one person. So it's, and maybe a couple of editors or whatever. So it is really, really hard what some of them do.
Yeah.
I say some of them.
Some of them. Not naming any names. Okay. Well, we've got, a final four questions for you, if we're ready to go on to them, Tim.
Yes. So we ask all of our guests these same four questions and we get a whole plethora of different answers. So, Ollie Webb, what's got you excited at the moment?
What's got me excited? Esports, I think. Yeah, e-gaming and e-racing and being able to race against people you wouldn't normally do. It's a mix of championships all in one room.
Excellent. And we'll see you on an e-sport race soon. That's exciting. We'll obviously be cheering you on. And one of our previous podcast guests, Abby Eaton, was she in the last one? Or she's coming up in the next one?
She was in the, she was not in, not the not GP ones, but she was in one of the iRacing ones.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So,
there's quite a few actually. There's a few. Track on them.
Yeah. Harry, go ahead.
Would you be a professional guitar player? That's the question. If you weren't a racing driver,
I would love, if I wasn't a racing driver, to be a Red Bull Air Race pilot.
Ooh,
without,
oh wow, great answer.
That is specific.
Yeah, I would. I've been up in one before, and the guy was mental enough to give me the stick at a decent enough height that I couldn't kill us if it started going wrong.
Yeah.
Pull 11.8 G that day, and that was I'll never forget that.
That dream will never come to reality because it doesn't exist anymore.
I know, can you believe it? So that's exactly what he did. He bought one of the last Red Bull aeroplanes when the championship ended, and he just does it for fun now. So his time out during the coronavirus is taking his plane up into the sky.
Amazing. Yeah. It was very cool. Very cool racing. You have to do a Red Arrow or something else instead.
Yeah.
I love the Red Arrows. If I see the Red Arrows, when they do Silverstone and I'm at the race, if they fly over me, I tend to just burst into tears. Can't hack it.
Well, I've got a little story about the Red Arrows if we've got time. Actually.
Yeah, of course we have.
Yeah, go for it.
So I worked at BAC Mono, the car company, for about 6-7 years. And a guy from the Red Arrows, who got very friendly with the team there, with Neil Briggs, who was having his christening on one of the weekends near Alton Park. So we're kind of back and forth texting this Red Arrows pilot, Goodwood, at different events. And out of the blue, during this christening, he said, "Oh, I see you near Alton Park. We're actually on the way to London from this RAF base near Alton Park to do a salute to the Queen." And obviously, they're only allowed out when they do these shows. Other than that, it's just a practice. So I have a video of the full RAF squadron, who apparently to this day is still the only time they've ever done it because it's super against the rules. Because the flight path that they had to log literally crossed over Alton Park, where this christening of this little church was happening. And they descended below their legal amount and turned the smoke on and came over a christening in Cheshire of about 15 people and did a private Red Arrows display while we're texting the pilot as he's coming over. Oh, and I've got a video of it. It's unbelievable.
Oh my God, that is amazing.
I'd have definitely cried. Stuff like that just gets me. Anything, even when I see that there's that aircraft called the, is it the Falcon? The big one?
Yes.
It looks like one giant wing, like a giant triangle. Have you seen it, Harry?
Oh yeah, yeah, I've seen them.
They had it at Goodwood until it stopped flying a few years ago. And that's that as well. It just gets me going. It just chokes me up. I get emotional. Pathetic.
Unbelievable. Get a grip. Machines.
They are amazing. Anyway, how much of your success is about luck and right place, right time, and how much do you put down to just sheer hard work?
70-30, hard work to luck. I think you aren't going to be in the right paddock or in front of the right people unless you've been successful, and no one's going to take your meeting unless you've won the championship or done the right thing in the first place. Of course, I'd love to say it's 100% that, but there's your 70%. And then your right place, your right time is generated from that 70. You don't get that 30 without that 70, but there is anyone who says it's 100% hard work is kidding themselves. Unfortunately, we live in a cruel world. The only way you can fix that is market yourself well and get yourself out there and be in the right place to tell people you've won the championship.
100%. And we said at the top of the show in the intro that you're the hardest working man in motorsport. And obviously we say that slightly tongue in cheek, but it's not far from the truth. I mean, you know, having worked with you, it's amazing how hard you work, and you're always working the sponsors and looking for a new angle and trying to make yourself different from everyone else. So hat tip to you, my friend. It's impressive the amount of work you put into your passion.
I appreciate that. Thanks for dealing with me. I'm fucking annoying. I know it.
Oh, he's so annoying. He's just always on it. Like, we've got a sponsor yet. You've got a sponsor. No, Ollie. No. I'm having a cup of tea. Leave me alone.
I'm literally a manager's worst nightmare. Definitely.
No, you were. You were nice to manage. I've had worse. I've only had five, so that you can tell what the other ones were.
Oh, Jamie's smashing it.
She's doing well. She's doing really
doing
well.
Really well.
And again, Harry, you'll throw daggers my way. I take full credit for where she is. Had it not been for me.
This happened when you weren't managing her.
It's funny.
The building blocks. It's the building
thank
blocks.
Thank you.
It's all about the building blocks.
It's all about the building
it?
Blocks. Yeah. Pushing her into that first single-seater car in British F3. Thank you very much. It's funny as well. When I stopped, nearly the week that I stopped managing Max Chilton, he came fourth in the Indy 500.
I remember that.
Right, Harry, over to you for the final question.
Yeah, the final one, Ollie. This is quite a complicated question, so just brace yourself.
Yeah.
What are you scared of?
What am I scared of? Losing and spiders.
Spiders.
Losing and spiders. You're
not the small
first
ones.
That said,
not the small ones, they're fine.
Like a tarantula
big
or something.
Tarantula, like hairy. 20 eyes.
Is
that how many eyes they've got? How many eyes do have spiders have? Do they actually have 20 eyes?
They've got one too many.
Between 20 and a million. That's the best answer I've ever heard. Excellent. Well, Ollie, look, thanks very much for joining us. It's whizzed by. Thank you for dialing in from your home up in somewhere up north, wherever those people frequent.
London. Yes. And have fun in your isolation.
Yes.
I hope you enjoy it.
Try my best.
And hopefully you'll get to turn some wheels at some point this season. And we'll be keeping track of your progress, and I'm sure we'll see you in a paddock very soon. Ollie Webb, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for listening and giving up your time for us. We'll be back with another episode soon. If you've missed any of the previous episodes, you can take a hop back in your chosen podcast player and find them all there. And don't forget, there's also loads more content on MMTV and the Motormouth app available to download on any device now. And to continue to allow us to help create lots of cool content and to keep making these podcasts, we want to let you know about our new Patreon program and how you can join. It just starts from £5 a month to 10 or 20. Each tier allows you slightly different levels of access depending on which one you choose. You can enjoy early access to podcast episodes, exclusive member benefits, merchandise, shout outs, and your chance to feature on one of our shows. Any support you can give us is massively appreciated and will help us grow and continue to bring cool content to race fans all over the world. Just search for us on patreon.com, or you can find out all the details across our socials. On Twitter, it's @Motormouth_, Instagram @Motormouth_official, and on Facebook, just search Motormouth. Like, subscribe, and review if you feel so inclined as well. It really helps people to find the podcast. But in the meantime, from myself and Tim, we'll catch you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.